The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Gene.
Yeah, hi. Is Brian?
Yeah, Brian. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
How are things out Pittsburgh way?
Not too bad.
So. All right. So I guess I'll get started.
Okay. Sounds good.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we're talking music with Ryan Lawrence, guitarist and vocalist for cult doom thrash metal band Dream Death, on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema with the focus on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Tonight we're talking music. Having only one 1987 studio album to their credit, the reputation of this fearsome and unclassifiable underground metal band has grown to exponential proportions in the intervening years. Long considered the crown jewel in the new Renaissance Records catalog, this undiscovered gem has taken a place all its own in the field of 80s metal. Often classified as some unique hybrid of doom, thrash, and even proto-death metal, Dream Death has long garnered a long-deserved reputation as one of the heaviest, rawest, and darkest bands in metal, prompting the long-belated releases of an early live show and a compilation of their demo work just to satisfy fan demand for more material. And now, 25 years on, there's burgeoning rumors of a new record rearing its eldritch head on the horizon. Join us for a journey into mystery when we speak to Brian Lawrence of Dream Death. In our first segment, we'll be talking influences in the early days of the band, their legendary demos, and Pittsburgh sludge metal. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're referring to, here's Dream Death with what's become perhaps their signature track, Back from the Dead.
We'll be right back.
Tonight, we're talking music, and we have with us a man who is the driving force behind a band whose sole studio album has gained a reputation unparalleled in underground metal, an album which has gone for high prices on the collector's market, and which has become quite revered by fans of thrash, doom, and death metal alike for its unique approach and dark, snarling aggression. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to present Brian Lawrence, guitarist and vocalist for Dream Death. Brian, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, thanks, Gene.
You know, there's a lot of underground metal bands that I was a big fan of back in the mid to late 80s and early 90s that were pretty much unheard of at the time, but now are finally being given their due. When I was listening to WMSC, when guys like Beelzebub were DJing there, or Matt O'Shaughnessy's Midnight Metal, I'd talk bands like Dream Death to fellow metalheads and just get blank stares. I think the heaviness might have scared a lot of them off. And then you had the guys that only listened to the big three or the big four of thrash and never got much deeper than that. And, you know, this isn't overly polished Bay Area thrash we're talking about. So it's quite refreshing to actually have kids schooling me on bands I'd never heard of. Stuff like Assassin, Warcry, Savage Death, Snow White. These bands just weren't on my radar back then. And I was into obscure underground metal more than just about anybody you could name. All that's leading up to what I'm about to say, which is that from what I've seen, Dream Death is considered one of the gold standards of undeservedly obscure underground metal. I mean, you're certainly the most sought after of all new Renaissance acts, and I hear nothing but high regard for Journey into Mystery across the board.
Oh, thank you.
I've heard you referred to as a doom band, a thrash band, even as a proto-death metal band. People compared you to Trouble and early Black Sabbath, both of which are more apparent, I think, on the Ode to Sorrow demo than on the album or the early demos, or Evil Chuck Schuldiner's Death, which I disagree with. But I think it's fairly apparent that if there's any band that you can be compared to, it's Celtic Frost around the time of Morbid Tales and Emperor's Return. You have a similar riffing style and guitar tone, for sure. So let's talk about influences here. Who inspired your sound and direction?
Well, I always throw the story back to, you know, Mike and I. You know, we'd been friends since a very young age, and we grew up as metalheads, basically. We were into everything. It wasn't just one avenue, you know. It started out, basically, you know, the late 70s hard rock scene, you know, with the typical big acts, you know, Ted Nugent, Kiss, whatever.
Right.
Went in the new wave of British heavy metal, and that's where we kind of became, basically, metal fanatics at that point. Trouble is, our age, you know, we were young fans, and by the time we started playing instruments ourselves, things started switching over a little bit to the mid-80s, where things became a little more, you know, for the most part, it was thrash-oriented. We were definitely thrash fans, too. We were just basically fans of all metal. A big influence, obviously, well, number one, obviously, in any band that gets thrown into the doom category, I mean, it's Black Sabbath, obviously,
right.
You know, I was big on them. The Celtic Frost, you probably hit the nail on the head there a bit. Sometimes that comparison kind of gets me a little, it wasn't as influential as maybe is what it sounds like. I think maybe the sliding chord type thing.
Right.
You know, and the tone of the guitar, possibly.
That's what it is, the guitar tone. You can hear that similarity there.
I was definitely a fan of them, though. I mean, don't get me wrong there. And, you know, Hellhammer, definitely love that early album. But I don't think that's why we started doing the sliding guitar chord thing, because of them specifically.
Right.
It was kind of like everything we wanted to do, we wanted to be heavy. You know, we were just trying to do our own thing. And instead of doing, like, maybe a note run, you know, somebody might just say three chords, like, with three notes, you know, we just said, let's play that with chords, you know. And we kind of went a little crazy with the power chords. Maybe a little bit back to the Dream Death days, but it definitely gave us a distinct sound.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we left a lot of people, when we play live, sitting there kind of staring at us going like, what the heck is going on here, you know? But we were influenced by everybody. I mean, you say Trouble, I was a huge Trouble fan, you know.
Right.
It wasn't really known as doom metal back then, you know, it was just heavy music.
Exactly, but it was just the underground. You were all like thrash and underground, that was basically it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If it makes you feel better, I actually didn't think Celtic Frost until recently, because I had to think, I was like, you guys have a guitar tone, it sounds just like someone I'm always listening to, and I'm like, oh, damn, it's Frost, you know?
Yeah, we hear that one a lot.
It never even occurred to me, it was just, okay, it was
probably not helping us out that we used to cover Circle of Tyrants quite a bit live back in the day.
Exactly.
So. I guess it did fit in with our sound a bit, so...
Was there any sort of a Pittsburgh scene at the time? You know, how did you guys get together and decide to make music like this?
That's exactly where I was going next. Were you familiar with the band Doomwatch from Pittsburgh? They actually got an album out on, I think they put it out on Metal Blade back in the day. Two of the members of that band, their names Jeff Chirrup and Dan Klasnick, basically, back in those days, you know, in Pittsburgh or wherever, I guess, you know, you're looking for another metalhead friend to find or whatever, and I happened to be going to college at that time, and I met Dan. He came walking in English class with a Venom shirt on, you know, you have an instant friend right there. And, he introduced me to Jeff and I showed him Mike. And we started playing together. Their influence definitely was more in the thrash realm. Not entirely thrash. They were very influenced by hardcore punk, and they introduced Mike and myself to the hardcore punk. And there was a huge hardcore punk scene in Pittsburgh. There was a band that was pretty famous here called Half-Life. They were famous in the scene and stuff. And,
right.
And all the touring punk bands came through here and played at a place called Electric Banana. We would always go see these bands. And whereas, and I'm going to speak for Mike also, I don't think he and I were huge punk fans. But it was fun going to the show, the energies, you know. And that
right.
Was, it's very common to see a pit at a concert now or whatever, but that was like, you know, what the hell?
Unheard of at the time, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So there was that influence, and I think Jeff and Dan from Doomwatch wanted to start a band with us at that time, but Mike and I, right at that moment, were writing all the Dream Death material. So it was kind of like, I think they thought we were in the band with them, but we were like, no, we're doing this thing. So it ended up being like Dream Death started up and Doomwatch started up, but I should give credit before that, there was one other band on the scene, like the three of us kind of kick-started the whole Pittsburgh scene, and the next thing you know, it was like crazy. It was like metalheads coming out of the woodwork. I mean, Pittsburgh before and after that, I haven't seen that for the few years in the 80s. It was just crazy how many bands were popping up, and at that time, a lot of touring bands would come through Pittsburgh all the time, and it was always kind of like all the local bands trying to get on and play with the national bands, you know, coming through. And it was fun times, you know, and I always say I met most of my good friends are from that era, you know, it was just a good time. But
so you think most of that actually just came from Doomwatch?
It was Dream Death, Doomwatch, and tons of other bands. I haven't drawn blanks on names now. I guess there was Eviction was around, and just a lot of bands around. I guess maybe Dream Death, I guess, was a little lucky. Maybe we were, I don't know what it is. Maybe we were recognized a little more outside of Pittsburgh than some of the other bands, you know, a little bit lucky there. But I kind of lost my thought.
I was just going to say that I've been talking to a couple of guys that are doing the retro metal thing, which is like the younger bands that are picking up on the old sound. Not
right.
The guys that are copycatting, but the ones that they hear something, they like it, and they go out there and they play something that, it kind of sounds like Dio. That kind of sounds like Bathory, but it's not like a slavish kind of thing.
Right.
And every time I talk to them, the scene builds up around, maybe one or two bands every time. There's a scene in Edmonton. There's a scene in Toronto. There's a scene in Raleigh. And so I'm wondering if that's the same thing that was going on here in Pittsburgh from what you're saying. Like, it's just, okay, there's Doomwatch, and then you got Dream Death, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's a scene.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I guess as being the first ones or whatever, Doomwatch and Dream Death, you get kind of recognized as the elder statesman of the whole thing. People kind of in the scene look up to you and things like that. And it's kind of weird. I was going to go off on, we were talking about the younger people, you know, we just did our reunion show lately, and I was just kind of surprised how many young people actually came out.
Know yourself.
Yeah, I was just like, I had no idea. You know, I just figured it would be a bunch of the old faces type of thing. And
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's what's fascinating, because, I mean, you would think that it's just, you know, the old guard like me, the ones that haven't totally drifted off and said forget about it. But, you know, there's a whole scene going on of kids that are, in their 20s, early 20s, and they really know their stuff. It's like I was saying in the beginning, they're actually schooling me on bands. I'm like, that's
right.
Not possible. Because back when, I was the one that was saying, hey, you got to check this band out. And it was like, who? What?
Right. Yep.
So why is such an evocative name? Where did you come up with Dream Death?
That is... It's not a good story, actually. Like the usual, it was just three of us in the band at that time. You know, we actually had all the music written for that first demo, and we're like, I shouldn't say it. We didn't have the song Dream Death at that time, but we had four or five of the songs, I guess. And it was, what are we going to call the band? And, everybody write down 10 names. And Ted Williams, our bass player at the time, there was an old horror movie called Death Dream, and he accidentally wrote it backwards, Dream Death. And I don't know why that sucked, but that was it.
I actually know that movie. I just watched it recently. It's a Bob Clark zombie movie.
There you go. I have to admit, I've never watched the movie. I've never seen, and I like some obscure horror movies, but that's one I've never seen.
Pretty good if you get a chance.
Is it? Okay, I'll check it out. A little more psychological, right?
Yeah, it's like one of those monkey's paw kind of things. The kid's a Vietnam vet, and he obviously got killed over there, but the mother wants him back so much that he comes back. And of course, while he's there, he's left to kill people to live.
Okay.
So let's go back to the beginning. You have a relatively recent CD release of your three demos called Back from the Dead. So let's address those days.
Okay.
It's fairly common for bands when they get a record contract to just carry over their most recent demo and material to the album. But you had some very strong tracks on your 86 demo that just fell by the wayside. I hear a lot of praise for Rise of Shadows in particular, but the one I really lament not making onto the album was your werewolf story, Under the Blood Red Moon. So why did you drop so many tracks? Were you planning on tapping those for a second album?
The answer was probably no, but, and it wasn't a dislike of those tracks. Well, you know, obviously in the album format back then, you only had 40 minutes, and we had written Divine and Agony and Black Edifice at that time, and with any band, you consider your newest material
your best. That's right.
Yeah, right. So those were definitely going on the album, and then, you know, the song Dream Death and Back
right.
to the Dead. So something had to get let out is what I'm getting to. Left off of there, I should say. But I don't know if we're going to go to those songs on a second album, but oddly enough, we're talking about possibly recording those and putting them on an album. Now we're kind of going back and forth whether we should do that or not. But yeah, we just played Wolvesbane and Under a Blood Red Moon at our reunion
show. Yeah, I was going to get to that.
Yeah, and, you know, we actually, I kind of had to talk everyone, like Terry, for instance, he loves Wolvesbane. He's always like, we got to play Wolvesbane, you know. But then when I say Under a Blood Red Moon, everybody kind of looks at me or whatever. And then we were trying Raising Shadows at first, and it really just kind of wasn't working for whatever reason. I said, why don't we do Under a Blood Red Moon? And we did it, and everybody was like, you know, everybody just loved it after that. It's probably during rehearsals that was one of the most fun we've had playing the songs was that song, actually, and everybody loved it. So it brought back memories on that one. But I was kind of surprised how the song kind of grooves a little bit in the middle. You know,
of the ones that got dropped, that's the one that really stands out to me. I mean, you know, they're all good. I like all this stuff, obviously. But, you know, everybody always goes right to Rise of Shadows, and I'm just like, well, what about this one?
Crazy Shadows, Mike was pretty big on playing that for a little bit, and then I guess when we were doing it, it's a little repetitious up until maybe the middle section, you know, and it was kind of,
right.
It wasn't holding like Under a Blood Red Moon was, so we didn't play that one, we didn't play Razies.
The 86 demo has a strong live feel to it. Were you just recording in one of your basements or garages, because it had that sort of tonality to it? No, seriously.
Yeah, we had rented a 4-track Tascam cassette recorder.
Right.
And basically, if I remember correctly, we laid the drums down to 3 tracks, did the old bounce them over to 2. I don't even know if the drums are in stereo now. I think about it. You know, that type of thing. Put the guitar over, put the bass guitar, and we only had 1 track left for vocals, and that track also had to have the lead guitars on it, you know, so it was like, so that's all just one rhythm guitar, and then, you know, guitar solos on that thing. But
right.
Yeah, we did it in between Mike and his mother's house and my mother's house, basically. We recorded
it. You also have a live album from 1986 that hails from this period, sometime between the first demo and the second, as it's mainly first demo material, plus you have Back from the Dead, a version of Method of Madness that you announced is not perfected yet, and 2 choice covers, one from Celtic Frost, which you mentioned, and one from Angel Witch. It's a bit telling that there isn't a tremendous divide from the original material on the Frost cover, yet you pull that material off more believably than anyone outside of Obituary.
Oh, thanks. Mike would probably want me not to mention that live album. He thinks it sounds horrible. I take it for what it was. You know, we were, you know, how old were we back then? You know, 18 to 20 years old,
right.
In the range, you know. And basically, it was like one of these things you get up on stage and it was all about the energy and you didn't even worry about tuning between songs type of thing. It was just, we were just young and, you know, had a lot to learn, basically. And he hears all that on there, everything out of tune and, you know, and everything. And it doesn't bother me as much, you know. I'm just
all about
energy and stuff. But yeah, it is what it is. I think that CD said it was our first show. I believe it was actually our second show. I don't think our first show was recorded, if I remember correctly. But
so
it was early.
Do you personally come out of a punk background? Because you get the same orientation I do, where it's like the energy is much more important than how perfect it is.
Like I said, there was a big Pittsburgh scene, you know, with hardcore and so forth, and I wasn't a huge fan as far as, I was spending all my money on metal albums, you know, I don't remember buying any punk albums back then, but I would go see a lot of the shows that came through, particularly like Dr. No.
Right.
You know, I always catch them when they came through, and so that's what I think a little bit you'll hear between the first Dream Death demo and the second Dream Death demo is probably a little bit of that. That first demo was recorded before any exposure to punk, and the second one's recorded after a little bit of exposure to punk, so you got the Back from the Dead and that type of thing on there.
Right.
People tend to say it's a little more thrash metal, and I kind of hear a little bit of the punk energy in there a little bit, but always trying to keep it heavy, you know. That was the main
right
thing.
Now, that album, the live album, came out a few years ago through Hell's Headbangers, who are actually a store with their own record label. They put out a lot of nice stuff, like the most recent Vladimir's album. They have the unreleased Second Massacre album and material from Colombia's Witch Trap and Bolivia's Special Holocaust. So how did this come about, and why the title of Pittsburgh sludge metal? What exactly is sludge metal anyway?
Okay. Well, the first part is the owner of the label is Don Crossley from Nunslaughter. He's just an old friend of ours, basically. I mean, we've known him for a long time. He just wanted to put this thing out, and we just said, go for it. We didn't even sign a contract. You know, it was nothing. We just said, do it. Like I said, Mike, if he probably would have heard it beforehand, probably would have said no, but he just, you know,
well,
we just let it go. Yeah, the Pittsburgh sludge metal thing was just, and I realize there's a sludge metal genre now, you know, and Dream Death probably wouldn't be put in that genre, I guess, but
I wasn't even aware
back
of
then
this.
We, yeah, when we were, yeah. when we were selling that first demo, we actually made posters with Pittsburgh Sludge Metal and, you know, put them up in all the local record stores and things like that. And we were just calling it that. I always tell the story, there was a, before there was Dream Death, you know, I was a big Black Sabbath fan and hanging around with your buddies in the neighborhood. And, you know, some guy was like, oh, Black Sabbath sucks, man. It reminds me of Sludge, that stuff at the, you know, you know, like, so I just kind of like, okay, it's Sludge, man, you know. it's simple as that.
I noticed the mix features a very prominent bass, which is pretty unusual for a metal release. But interestingly enough, because of the sort of music you do in there, I think it works pretty well. But it's certainly not what you'd expect. So was Ted responsible for the recording?
No, I think it's just how it came through out of the soundboard. You know,
right.
It wasn't meant to be an official recording. It was just people have collected these live tapes throughout the years. You know,
right.
I think that's just the way it came out.
So your second demo, More Graveyard Delving, which had a nice cover, by the way, with that Victorian guy and his lantern in the archway of the ruined crypt.
That's the artwork of Ted. He used to be responsible for all the Dream Death artwork back in the day, posters, T-shirts, the demo covers. He was
really nice. That was really nice, nice art. But this demo had a much more polished production than the first one. There was kind of a hollow sound, a lot of reverb, and something of what seems like a tube amp sound to the guitars. Were you tapping into the same setup that Tom G. Warrior was using for Frost, or where were you going?
No, that wasn't the intention. In fact, we hated the sound of that demo. It just didn't, I never found it powerful. It was our first trip into a real studio.
Right.
Which, we didn't know what we were doing, you know. That's all I can say. You know, we let the guys run the board, and I don't know, nowadays, you know, heavy music's more common in a sense. Like, if you go in a studio, people aren't going to look at you so bizarre. But we walked in the studio and we're playing this stuff, people were just like, who are these kids? You know?
Yeah.
I don't think they really took it seriously, and we didn't know enough to speak up about even what we were doing to make it sound good. So
it was
an experience, but the end result, not happy with it at all, really.
Yeah, I remember the time, so I know exactly what you're talking about. He's like, what? What is this stuff? Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
They want to record David Bowie or something and Dream Death.
Yep, that's right.
So, one thing that didn't make it to the album from this demo was the 2-minute Journey into Mystery intro that leads into Back from the Dead. So any reason you dropped that?
No, just it was time constraint. That was really it. Those two were always meant to go together, and you'll hear a lot of the times after those songs were written, they were always played together live, but it was just a time thing, yeah.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, Brian Lawrence of Dream Death. Coming up, we discuss New Renaissance and Journey into Mystery and the influence of Robert E. Howard. Only here on Third Eye Cinema. Howard-inspired track from Journey into Mystery. This is The Elder Race.
Through the mystic dawn, the hidden steps which only
how did you decide on New Renaissance Records as your label? Because they had a few choice bands, you know, Blood Feast and Kublai Khan being foremost, and you also had At War, but it was essentially a vanity label for Anne Boleyn to get her band Hellion stuff out there. And deservedly or no, at the time, New Renaissance had a bad reputation, not only for its mixed-up track listings and misspellings on some of the releases, but it had this rep as being a label with, and I quote this, a bunch of crappy thrash acts. So how was your experience with Anne and the label?
Well, you got it all exactly right there. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and badmouth the label or anything, but it was probably the worst thing that happened to Dream Death, I would say. Just the reason we signed is because basically the first one to come along type thing, you know. And again, I don't want to point – we were so young at the time. I mean, it's so easy to look back later in your life and look at the stupid things you've done. And we're just so inexperienced and made bad decisions in those days, you know. And those are the things we try not to do in our lives now. And it's all from those days. But we signed to that label. We were basically promised so much for our recording costs and so forth and everything. And the truth is, I haven't seen a dime from Journey into Mystery. I haven't made a cent off Journey into Mystery myself. And I can speak for Mike and Terry. We don't have much contact with that anymore, but I assume nobody's gotten paid for that. So.
Wow.
And it's out there on iTunes right now, you know. I don't condone myself personally illegal downloading because I know what it takes for bands to put their heart, their soul, their money, and every last penny they got to record an album. So I always buy albums. This is the one exception to the rule. I don't care if people steal Journey into Mystery; they can download it all they want because I don't see anything from it. You know, it's just I don't know if it sold 5 copies. I don't know if it sold 5,000 copies. I have no idea.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I mean, I was going to ask you, how about marketing royalties in the business end of things? Because there was a bit of a rumor mill going around at the time, and you hear from bands like Blood Feast, for example, that the label was being run kind of shoddily, and I was wondering what the reality of the situation was. But if you're saying you didn't see a dime, that's pretty bad.
do you know if they've gotten paid for anything? Yeah, it's the one big black mark in the Dream Death history. I mean, we made a lot of mistakes and we were rookies in a lot of ways, but it was all fun. You know, it was all, the music came first, but obviously if you spend money on a studio, you'd like to at least recoup that money and so forth. And that never happened back in the day. And
that's really horrible. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you know, that actually kind of why things kind of changed. That's why there was a third demo after the album and things like that. We didn't really want to put an album out with them. And
okay, because I was about to get that. Let me
a little bit. I'm jumping ahead there.
That's all right. It's just I'm you knocked me for a loop with that. What? You make a dime?
not 1 cent. It's weird because we would get fan letters from Germany, like tons of letters from Germany. Germany was a big thing, you know, back in the Dream Death days. We sold a lot of demos there and everything, and then we'd call Anne up and say, have we sold any records? She'd be like, you've hardly sold anything, you know, type thing. And I'd say, well, we need some royalty statement from Europe or something, you know, because I'm sure we sold some in Germany. And, I think Europe, we haven't sold anything really. And I'm like, It was just kind of like I think we really signed a bad contract. We've even looked into that contract recently. And
I've bought it twice. I had it on the record. Now I have it on CD. So.
Well, yeah, we have interest in labels that want to actually put out vinyl copies of Journey into Mystery. And they call us and ask if it's okay to do that. And my inclination is to say yes. But, of course, we get lawyers to look at the contracts and things. And it sounds like we've had one lawyer tell us that we basically signed all that music away for the rest of our life. And, you know, so... So I don't expect to ever see a dime from Journey into Mystery, but
that's really bad. I'm really sorry to hear that.
I'm
laughing, but it's just like in disbelief.
The funny part, maybe not the funny part of the story, is I think that album, I don't remember how much it cost us to make, but we had borrowed extra money from my mother, you know, like $800 or something to finish up the album. And it was back in, you know, we're younger and we're like, don't worry, we're going to pay you back. We're going to get it from the record label. Yeah. No, we didn't.
All right. So trying to get back to the topic here. Jeez.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just, like I said, I'm just really baffled. Because, you know, every time, even back then when the word got out, because originally nobody knew who you were, and I'd say, oh, check this out, and I'd be like, huh, who? But you guys had this reputation, and everybody was, once they rediscovered this whole thing, it was like, oh, yeah, I won't put on the level of, you know, the yellow-covered Bathory, but it was a big deal, like, oh, Dream Death, everybody wants this album. And then, you know, New Renaissance re-released it, and everybody kind of jumped on it, including me.
Right.
And, you know, now it's still like this big thing. Oh, you've got to hear Dream Death. This is like, you know, the best record that they released in the Renaissance. And it's, you know, one of the greatest Doom records or Doom Thrash or Death or whatever you want to call it. And you tell me you didn't make a cent on it. It's like,
yeah. And we laugh about it now when we talk about it all the time. And, I say to them,
oh, you got
you know, I say to the other guys, you know, this has happened to, like, bigger bands even, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Black Sabbath had, like, that company put out Live at Last without their permission and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, we didn't know what we were doing.
So Terry Weston joined you at this point for your soul studio effort, Journey into Mystery, which we've been sort of discussing. You've been performing as a three-piece up to this point. So why add a second guitar?
The easy answer to that, first of all, was friendship, probably.
Right.
We were good friends with Terry. Actually, I talked about Doomwatch before when Jeff and Dan kind of assumed that me and Mike were going to be in Doomwatch, and then we split to do Dream Death. We left them with a void at bass and drums.
Right.
I was actually the bass player in Doomwatch. So Terry, who was a guitarist, just wanted to get in a band, basically. We said, hey, why don't you get Terry in there? Terry was always a good friend of ours, and basically Doomwatch wasn't, you know, he didn't want to do the hardcore thing. He was kind of, he was really into the heavy music. So it just kind of came about friendship, really, but we thought adding a second guitar would make everything heavier, too. Now, thinking about it, though, actually, I was probably the worst lead guitar player ever in the whole world, and he could play the lead guitar much better than me, so that was an added bonus, too. So from then on out, I didn't play any leads so once he started getting comfortable with the music and so forth. So vocal duties also, that made it, it was just a lot to do on stage playing leads and singing also,
right.
So nice to pass that off to somebody.
So one thing that always stood out about the album to me was its cover. It has a really odd vibe to it. It's very archaic and evocative of earlier centuries and magic. Who came up with that one?
That's funny because I've seen some comments, I guess, now that you have access to the internet nowadays, you get to read all kinds of things about yourself. And I've seen things like, it must have been one of their girlfriends that drew that cover or something like that, you know, type thing. And actually, it was Ted, the bass player. It might have been ex-girlfriend at the time, but she was an artist, and we had used her. It was just kind of a loose concept, and she kind of went with it. We were happy with it. You know, we were putting the old songs that we didn't use from the first demo, the name
right.
of the book on the back and so forth and everything. For whatever reason, you know, rightly or wrongly, that cover probably gets flagged a little bit. But we actually used her again for the Penance, Red Less Travel album, which turned out exactly how I pictured. So she's a good artist, and she gave us what we wanted for that cover. And
yeah, because, you know, for what it's worth, I always liked it. So.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Yeah, you meet people that like it, and you meet people that are like, what's this amateur stuff, so, you know.
So let's address something that I've never heard anyone discuss in relation to Dream Death. The usual comment you hear on the album is that it's very Lovecraftian, but I'm actually picking up Robert E. Howard instead. You know, The Elder Race is about the cult story of the Shadow Kingdom, and Black Edifice appears to be about the Black Stone. As a huge Howard fan myself, I really appreciate that, and I have to ask, what led you to use Howard as a source of some of your music? Because people doing horror-based lyrics, they do tend to gravitate to Lovecraft if they even move beyond slasher films and the apparent horror movies lyrically.
I'll split that into two here. I probably wrote or write, I guess, about 80% to 90% of the lyrics. I was not Robert E. Howard influenced, and I was not H.P. Lovecraft influenced either. It was just all kind of made-up stories and so forth. The Black Edifice actually was just a completely made-up story.
Okay.
But on the other hand, Mike Smale, the drummer, is a huge Robert E. Howard fan. He worships Robert E. Howard. And so he wrote the lyrics to Crazy Shadows and The Elder Race, and you hit the nail on the head. You got these stories. You know, the story correct for The Elder Race there, but he based that completely off those. And I don't know if you've seen any photos from the old days. He even used to have, at one point, you know, like Frank Frazetta Conan pictures on his bass drum and stuff like that. So he's heavily influenced by that. I'm kind of just a generally influenced by different things. I wouldn't say I've read H.P. Lovecraft. I wouldn't say any of the stories were stolen from him. I try to make up my own little stories, I guess. But,
right. We're not talking about direct swipes, although that was pretty close.
I'm telling you, The Elder Race is based straight from a story.
That's okay. That's pretty close. But normally speaking, it's not like, you know, the stories are telling stories. It's just, that's what I was picking up. I just heard, well, you know,
right.
Howard. And there's Howard again.
Yeah. I guess we didn't give any credit to that on the album, but that was a good pickup.
It's also interesting to me because Howard's stories, including his horror tales, seem more suited to metal because Lovecraft has this fatalism about him that leaves his characters swooning, fainting, submitting to the forces they encounter, whereas Howard's protagonists will always end up gritting their teeth and fighting to the last.
Right.
You'd think more bands would pick up on this and tap into his material for their lyrics. But.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I get to sing those lyrics that Mike wrote, and, you know, it's all about aggression and you know, and fighting back, just like you said. So definitely you would think that would fit in better.
On the other hand, I am pretty sure that Back from the Dead references that sequence from Creepshow with the zombie at the birthday party.
Yeah, they're probably like loosely influenced by that. Yeah, I would think so. I don't remember exactly, but you're probably right.
In terms of the sound on Journey into Mystery, I find it interesting that with the improved production, it feels like a little something that comes across in the demos and live material was now lost. I mean, it's a very strong and unique album, but I tend to appreciate the intricacies of the songs and the contributions of the individual instruments more in the demo and live material for whatever reason. It might be because the vocals are more front and center than the bass and the drums, and the guitar tone seems a little different than the other material you have out there. What did you think of the production or mastering on the record? Did you get the sound you wanted?
Again, we hated it back then. I told you we hated the sound of the second demo.
Right.
For whatever reason, we went back to the same studio. We had a second guitar player, Terry, and so we thought we would know a little more. Maybe we did know a little more. I think maybe it sounds better than the second demo, but it's still... I can remember, like, driving home with that thing, and we were ready to throw it out the window, you know? We were just like... But at that stage, you know, you're young, and you're out of money, and you don't know where to go from there, so, you put it out.
I'm not saying that at all, because it's not bad. It's just I was noticing a change there, and I was like, well...
Yeah, none of those recordings, to me, ever captured the Dream Death sound perfectly. The closest one, probably, is the first demo, believe it or not, which was the most crudely recorded, but it actually... That was probably
that
more how the guitar sounded.
Strangely enough, that when I was saying that comment, that's what I was thinking of. That, and to some extent, the live album, even though the bass is up front, because it's got that same sort of feel as the first demo, whereas by the time you get to the latter demo and then this, it's different. There's something missing there.
Which probably goes hand in hand with it. I always think Dream Death sounded better live than it did in any recording. And so when you look at that first demo or that live recording, you're probably getting a little more accurate sound, even though it's not perfectly recorded or whatever, but
right.
You know, you're getting more of the basic of the sound, though, for sure.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Brian Lawrence of Dream Death. Coming up, we discuss the third demo, Penance, and the new album. And we're here on Third Eye Cinema. Another one from Dream Death. This is Hear My Screams. We'll be right back. I think you've already answered this one, but what I was going to say at this point was, now, as I mentioned before, Journey into Mystery is widely considered to be the crown jewel in the new Renaissance catalog, and it was quite sought after in the collector's market at a certain point. So why was there never a second album released?
Yeah, you know, that was we didn't want to put anything else out on that label.
Right.
We didn't understand at that point what we're tied into, so we started... I remember distinctly looking in the name changes back then, which is probably, that's horrible for momentum of a young band, you know, try to change your name.
Just getting your name out there, and all of a sudden you're like, maybe we should
somebody
else.
You know, I remember those conversations. I don't remember the names that we came up with, but, you know, we were pretty serious about it, and it was mostly to try to get off that label and just to move on to something else. But
right. Now, you did release a third demo in 1988, presumably intended as the second Dream Death album, which was Ode to Sorrow. And you replaced Ted Williams with Richard Friend. And this lineup of the band would release the album Road Less Traveled, which contained two of the three songs from that demo, as Penance. So how do you feel Penance differed from Dream Death?
Well, this is where Mike and I... So Mike, I've been out of... I'm always a lover of music, but I quit performing for a long time. I just... all the headaches and heartaches and so forth or whatever. But Mike stayed with it the whole time. He's been true. And to him, it's all been one big, long road. He doesn't view Dream Death and Penance as two different entities, whereas I do. I think Penance was definitely a nod towards more what you would call doom metal, you know. And Dream Death, me, I don't like to categorize Dream Death. You know, you got people call it doom metal, you got people call it death metal, and I don't think it's any of those. We just try to play heavy and aggressive and, you know, intense music. And Penance was definitely... At that point in our lives, we were hanging around a lot with actual doom bands, you know, like guys from Baltimore, you know, Revelation, so forth. And we loved those guys just as human beings. They were great people, you know, and everything. And their music had such a, I don't know, an integrity to it, you know, and the lyrics were very much, you know, they meant what they were saying and type things.
Right.
I think we were influenced by that a lot, and we kind of went off in that direction, although retaining maybe a little more the raw heaviness type thing or whatever. I mean, my vocals definitely would never be called clean or anything like that. But
yeah, that's kind of what I was hearing, because what I was noticed was that Penance falls much closer to the stereotypical doom sound, stuff like Trouble, St. Vitus, Sabbath. It doesn't have that unique, almost unclassifiable sound that Dream Death did, which is almost exactly what you just said. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. But if Mike was on the phone with you right now, you would get a different story. You know, to him, it's just one progression after another to him. So, so two different ways to look at it, I guess. But.
What happened after that album, the first Penance album, Road Less Traveled? Because Terry Weston and Mike Smail kept going, but they dropped you and Richard Freund. Wasn't this your band?
It wasn't, they didn't drop me by any stretch of the imagination. It was kind of at that point, I can't speak for Rich at all or whatever. I guess I became pretty disenchanted with the whole thing. It became like, I don't know, I could go on for hours, but I won't. I just got kind of sick of the whole thing. I don't know. It was just, it really didn't have anything to do with music. It had a little bit with music, but it kind of had a lot with what was going on in my life personally at that time too, and things like that. Yeah. So. It wasn't a drop. They went on, and you know, I'm a big fan of what they did after that. I think Parallel Corners would be the best thing with the Penance name on it. You know, at the beginning I would call it Mike and my band and whatever, and after that it became Mike and Terry's band. So that's what Penance became.
So you had a brief reunion tour and album announced back in 2009 on Blabbermouth, but of course it was one of their Damn Near Fool's Day jokes. But it does show how much of a following you gathered in the intervening years, that your name would be tossed out there like that just to get everyone's goat. But
okay.
But you did finally do a one-night reunion earlier this year, some video of which is up on the internet. And like I mentioned in the beginning, I was very happy to see you doing Under a Blood Red Moon. Are there any plans to do anything further with Dream Death?
Yeah, there actually is. That, you know, that kind of got our juices. Sorry. That kind of got our juices flowing, you know. I can say we're honestly working on a new album right now. We're probably about 60% through with the songwriting material right now, and 100% we definitely have new material going. Everybody's pretty fired up about it. The thing that interests me about keeping it Dream Death as opposed to Penance per se is kind of what this topic we're having, where Penance was kind of considered more doom metal. And I think my feelings about writing the new material have been that we want the music to be, I would like the music to be very aggressive and not fall in any category neatly. I think just heavy and intense. I was a little worried about what everybody else would think in the band, and Mike called me one day. He's like, hey, I really want to write this new Dream Death material, but I don't want to, I think it should be something different. And, you know, I think It shouldn't be like, you know, riff, verse, chorus, riff, verse, chorus, guitar solo, fade out type thing. And I said, man, you're speaking music to my ears. I can say that the new Dream Death material, you know, obviously you don't want to call it Dream Death and have it be, come out sounding like Phil Collins or something, like, you know what I mean? It's got to be Dream Death. But, you know, I think it's Dream Death with us in modern times. So I hope old Dream Death fans will like it. So, yeah, I think it's going to be heavy and intense and something different, I hope so.
Yeah, that was definitely a trademark of Dream Death was your, I hate to say the word awkward, but you know what I'm trying to get at, these kind of off-kilter song structures.
Yeah.
And that was another thing that said Frost to me, because I was like, you know what, Frost was kind of like that too.
You know, I downplay the influence, but, you know, maybe that's there or whatever, because I like that off-kilter type thing, so maybe that influence is buried in me. But
I'm really glad to hear you guys are working on some new stuff, because I'd heard rumors back and forth, but you never know what to believe on the internet. Because, you know, both the new generation of metalheads and old schoolers like myself have been chomping at the bit for something like this for years, so that's really good news. You're just, right now, just writing material. You don't have anything recorded, or you don't have any plans to go with the label or anything yet. That's off in the distance still.
Yeah, Mike would prefer that we independent release, and that's the avenue we're going to go right now, unless we hear something better. But
you sure New Renaissance isn't knocking on your door?
No, we're not. We're not taking any offers. No.
In summation, do you feel that Dream Death has been an influence on any bands that followed, or as I suspect, do you remain more or less unique for all these years?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not that I know of. You know, I hear, people talk to you and say, yeah, you influenced me. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I couldn't think of anybody. I was like, this is strange. Usually I can say, okay, these are probably your influences because I can hear where that came from. And then these are the bands you influenced. I can't do that with you. It's just like, it was Dream Death.
And that's what I hope when we put out this new album. I hope you say the same thing, really. So,
do you have anything you want to promote or a website you want to share with the listeners? Maybe point them to your Facebook page?
We just have the Dream Death Facebook page. I don't maintain that. Rich does. Rich Freund does. And that's where we try to put any latest news, and I hope people can find that on there. I know when we throw out information about when we did the reunion show and we put out that we're actually going to do a new album on there, and it seems like the hits pick up or whatever, so I hope people are catching the website.
Well, with that, Brian, unless you got any other material you want to touch on, I'd like to thank you for joining me here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back on to discuss your new album, Hint Hint.
Oh, that'd be great. I hope that happens soon. So.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
And to close out our interview with Brian, here's one last track from Journey into Mystery. Stay tuned after the close for one more from Dream Death, but right now it's time to Dream Death. We'll be right back. joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Brian Lawrence of Dream Death. Next week on week 27 of Third Eye Cinema, horror punk greats the Vladimirs. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on the air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. One final track from Dream Death, my favorite song that didn't make it to the album off the first demo. This is Under a Blood Red Moon. Thank you. part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.